owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. In the military, teamwork, cooperation, and the concept of team before self is the key to success. Today on American Warrior Radio, we'll be talking to two veterans, one a former submarine officer and the other a Navy combat surgeon who deployed with the SEAL teams in a joint special operations task force. Now, as one could imagine, those types of military careers can lead to quite a few experiences, sea stories, if you will. So I suppose it's natural that both of these men would become storytellers following their military careers. Check that. Prolific storytellers. Individually and together, Brian Andrews and Jeffrey Wilson have written so many books I gave up counting. They are good reads. But what I find fascinating is how these two veterans have applied the concepts of cooperation and team before self in their publishing and business models. You're going to enjoy today's chat. Jeffrey, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hey, it's great to be here, Ben. Thanks for having us.
And Brian, you there as well?
I'm here. Thanks for having us.
Modern technology, I love it. Now, quick disclaimer, Jeffrey, you reached out to us, not the other way around. So if today's mission goes sideways, I'm not taking responsibility.
I take full responsibility, no problem.
That was a perfect example of what team before self isn't, correct?
Right. Right, exactly.
Jeff, let's introduce you to our guests first. You had sort of an ADHD career path. You've been an actor, a firefighter, paramedic, jet pilot, diving instructor, vascular surgeon. You're a husband and father to two extremely well-behaved children. Is there something you know that the rest of us don't that gives you 36 hours in a day where the rest of us have only 24?
Yeah, well, you know, I did these things sequentially, not all at once. So my mom says I just can't keep a job. But it's actually just slightly more exhausting than you said because we actually have four kids at our house. So, that's my favorite job that I've ever had, being a husband and a dad to these four amazing children. That's the best one of all. But, I guess I might have a little attention disorder. I'm not sure. I do move on, that's for sure.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, right, exactly.
you had been in the Navy. You were finishing up your medical training when 9/11 occurred, and you rejoined the active duty Navy. That was that's not an uncommon story, but I still have a lot of respect for that.
I think it's a very common story, isn't it? I was in the Navy before. I was going to be an aviator. Was in a motorcycle accident and got out and did some other things. I flew civilian for a while, which I didn't find terribly rewarding, and wound up in another part of the government doing some work. And I actually went off to medical school looking for a life of peace after a little bit of violence in that previous life. But I always wanted to serve. My family has served. We're a service-oriented family for sure. And so I was a naval reservist with a plan to be a Navy physician when the terrorists plowed those planes into the towers and into the Pentagon, and like so many Americans, it just really upset me. And so I called my detailer and said, look, I want to go back on active duty. And I was able to make that happen and serve with the Marines first, and then eventually found myself in a SEAL team community supporting those guys. So I think it says a lot about America, the vast number of people that responded in that way.
No question. Now, Jeffrey, we've had a number of combat surgeons on, a lot of medics, PJs, those types of folks. Is the recruitment process for the SEAL teams and those kind of special forces, is that different in your line of work than you just volunteer, say, hey, I want to be on the SEAL team? They say, okay.
Yeah, so it's not, for me, it wasn't a volunteer thing. It's a little different, you know, serving at the JSOC team. They sort of find you rather than the other way around. You know, the other thing is having an actual surgeon. You know, we talk about the SEAL teams and having – or the Marines and having a battalion surgeon. Those guys aren't surgeons. They're medical providers who are doing, you know, patch-up trauma care, which is extremely important. Nothing but respect for those guys. But the surgeons generally tend to be in the cash. They tend to be back at the level two, or in the case of the Marines, they could be a first team surgeon like I was, moving a little closer to the forward edge of the battlefield. So – when I was with the teams, it was a little bit of a unique thing. We were trying to build a different type of platform, and that's probably about all I can really say about it. But so it was a little bit unusual. They came and recruited me. We did a joint operation when I was in Iraq with the Marines, and I ran into some folks there. They reached out to me once I got back stateside and said, hey, we'd like you to try to develop a program over here. So that's sort of how that happened.
Very, very cool. Brian, a little bit about you. You're also a Navy veteran, but unlike Jeffrey, you know, Jeffrey was drawn to the light. You chose to spend your days in darkness several hundred feet below the surface of the ocean.
That's right.
Bit of a departure.
I lived and served underwater. So we were both doing sort of mission war type of things, pointy tip of the spear activities, just very, very different platforms that we were associated with. I was an officer on a fast attack submarine in the Pacific, and we did all kinds of really, really interesting things. And I served before 9/11, so it was still a very, very busy time, just doing different types of missions than, you know, counter-terror.
What, Brian, what was it like? I mean, was it a challenge? I mean, clearly submarine service is not for everyone. I was just actually chatting with my producer before we went on the air about that. But was it particularly challenging for you to serve on the second best boat in Pearl Harbor?
I think you're referring to the Tucson maybe as being the best boat. Could that be?
SSN 770. I'm just throwing that out there. Also a fast attack. But love all. And ladies and gentlemen, don't wish a veteran a happy Memorial Day and do not call someone a submariner. They're submariners. You hear us, Jeffrey?
Yes. You've made that quite clear on our last call.
Now, Brian, interesting. I teased Jeffrey about not being able to keep a job. Your path into the submarine service, the silent service, was a little bit also sort of roundabout. I mean, you and your dad were doing the old college tour thing. You said, I want to go to, I think it was Vanderbilt, and you had kind of a financial come to Jesus revelation. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're 18 years old, and you just assume, you know, that whatever you want to do, like, people are going to make it happen for you. Maybe a little bit of naivety there on my part, but I did the college tour and got accepted into Vanderbilt, and I was really excited to attend the school. And I remember telling my dad, "Yeah, I've made my decision. I'm going to Vanderbilt." He said, "Well, congratulations, son. How are you going to pay for that?" And I said, "Well, I thought you're going to pay for that." He said, "Make you a deal. I'll pay for 1 year of Vanderbilt, or I'll pay for 4 years of a fine state school, and you know, you pick. So if you want to go to Vanderbilt, you have to find a different way to do that. You know, pay for those other 3 years." So I, you know, once I got done moping and put my, you know, pulled my bootstraps up, you know, I said, all right, I got to figure out how to do this, how to pay for this, because I really want to go. So there's fantastic programs out there for all the branches of the service. So I applied to the Navy ROTC program. And for those of you who are not familiar with ROTC, you know, it's a way that you can enter the military by still going to not one of the service academies like the Naval Academy or West Point. You go to a traditional university, but you're going through officer preparatory training while you're in university. And typically the deal is, you know, they pay for the schooling and help contribute to room and board. And then at the end of your, you know, when you graduate, then you're commissioned as an officer and you go into whatever, you know, specialty or service that you've been selected for. And that's what I did.
And Brian, hold that thought, because there's something when we talk a little bit later in the show about transitions. You had one of your great life lessons was at that point where you decided to go into the as I mentioned, the submarine corps, the silent service, and are sitting across from an admiral. But hold that story, because it's a great story I want to share later in the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew and Wilson is not a folk band. They are just prolific writers. They've got a new book releasing this month, and you're going to want to hear more about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host. We're talking with Jeffrey Wilson and Brian Andrews. They have got, they're just, as I mentioned, prolific writers. You can sign up and subscribe to their newsletter. That web address is andrews-wilson.com. Check it out. You can enjoy it. Gentlemen, back to you. I'd be remiss. I mean, what really we talked about your, and honestly, I stopped counting the number of books. You've got 15 different series, probably a dozen books. You write under pseudonyms. You got your own things going. It's very confusing, but it's a great product. Jeffrey, your latest offering, Sons of Valor, releases this month, and it's always a challenge to talk about a new book without giving too much away, but I heard an interview where one of you said that Sons of Valor is a sort of a back-to-roots book for you, too. Could you explain a little bit about what that means?
Yeah, absolutely. So Sons of Valor is fun for us because it's a spinoff series. So we've done very well with the Tier 1 series, 6 books out in that series, the 7th coming next year. And that series is about a deep, dark, secret task force type unit that is working behind the scenes to protect America. Always super fun stuff to write. But the premise of that book is that this Tier 1 SEAL team gets wiped out in an ambush because of leaked intelligence. And the sole survivor is allowed to pretend that he also perished and assume a new identity to hunt down the people responsible. And so that sort of launched the Tier 1 series and John Dempsey, our hero there. And it's been super fun to write. But throughout the writing of that series, we always knew, look, in real life, if that were to happen, eventually they're going to stand up that Tier 1 SEAL team again. We had this character, Chunk Redman, in the Tier 1 series, very minor character, appears in a few of the books for a few of the chapters. He's a Navy SEAL officer, and him and his men come and augment Dempsey and his team at Team Ember. And so we got so much positive response from readers, so much fan mail about Chunk Redman. People just loved him. So it became a very natural thing for us to say, well, if we're going to spin off a series and get back to, like you said, back to our roots, bringing in some just Tier 1 SEAL team type action, who better than Chunk Redman? Let's put him in charge of this unit. So that's what we did. So Sons of Valor is the first book in the series, and it is the reconstituting of the Tier 1 SEAL team with Chunk at the helm. And I think that what's fun about this series, not only do we get back to just straight up, you know, JSOC-level teamwork, but we also are able to look at something really cool, which is, look, we've been at this war for 20 years now. There are people, there are kids that are getting ready to deploy who potentially weren't even born on 9/11, as inconceivable as that is. I mean, it seems like yesterday, right, Ben? And so when you think about that, you think about this new generation, our sons who are now continuing this war, both on our side and on the side of the terrorists. And so that was what Brian and I sort of brainstormed. What is it like now? What would it be like? What's different for this new generation of warfighter and the new generation of antagonists? So really exciting to be able to delve into that in this series.
You know, it's interesting, Jeffrey, you say that I'm involved with a volunteer nonprofit that conducts an annual 9/11 Memorial Challenge, and we think it may be the largest in the country using exclusively military and first responders and their families. And one of the things we added a couple of years ago was an oath of office for new recruits. We'd have a general or someone down there and administer the oath wherever we can see that. And a couple of years ago, that's what struck us. Said, you know, these young people taking the oath, they weren't born. They don't remember 9/11. And yet, you know, they're going to take that oath and put on the uniform. I tell you, gentlemen, one thing that drives me crazy, I like watching the superhero films, and it just drives me crazy when somebody who can fly to the sun and back and his, you know, bullets bounce off their chest has angst issues. That's not what I want to read. I mean, they're a superhero. Just let them be a superhero. And one of the things I really like about Sons of Valor, Chunk, the main protagonist in this, he's not a broken character. No drug habits, you know, no angst, no family's issue. He's just a good old dude. And the number two thing was I love the professional mentor relationship between him and Whitney, the millennial, that, if you will, that you put in the book. Brian, was that, I know Jeffrey says you're the brains of the outfit. Was that done specifically to address that generation?
I think it's really astute that you picked up on those two themes. And if I'm the brains, then Jeff's the heart. So we definitely... We definitely have to share duties when it comes to plotting out and thinking about, you know, all these rich character interactions. And And yeah, it's, you know, we're telling stories, but we want these characters to be representative of real life people. And, you know, as a storyteller, you mentioned the Marvel movies, you know, people want it bigger and badder and, you know, superheroes are sort of ruling the day. But, you know, that's not real life. The real life men and women that are out there serving at the pointy tip of the spear, they're professionals, but they're humans. And I think what, you know, makes them extraordinary is the fact that they are ordinary people doing extraordinary things and taking extraordinary risks. You know, if something goes wrong, they don't get to just stand up and brush themselves off because they're bulletproof, right? That's not how real life works. And so that was important for us to communicate that first and foremost. And then second of all, to kind of come back to the theme that you mentioned, which is, you know, in fiction, a lot of times it's these dark heroes with skeletons in the closet and all these things that the readers want to feel bad for them by and, you know, empathize with. But that doesn't describe a lot of these professionals that are out there in real life. Jeff, would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, when we started out with Tier 1, we certainly have a more dark, brooding character in John Dempsey. But even in that series, but more so in this one, we've tried very hard to make our characters an amalgam of the men and women that we have actually served with. And what is so astounding about those people is exactly what Brian said, that what they do is extraordinary, but it's made more extraordinary by how ordinary they are, how not bulletproof they are, that it's that sense of patriotism, the love of country, the love of their team and their teammates, the love of their families. That's what drives them. And they are doing extraordinary things because of that love, not because they're bulletproof. And so it makes the sacrifice all that more compelling. And so that's what we've always tried to do in our books. But I think here in Sons of Valor, we're able to take that up a level beyond what we could do in Tier 1. So we've always tried to write those characters that way, make them real people that you can relate to. The greatest thing we can do is if one of our former teammates comes back and says, yeah, I totally get what that guy was going through, or, you know, that's exactly what we would have done in that situation. We know we sort of done something right when we get that kind of feedback.
Jeffrey, I'm curious, and just to clarify for folks, in case I don't want them to misunderstand, because I'm a big anti-stolen valor kind of guy. You served with the SEAL teams. You were not a SEAL. You did not go through BUDS.
Absolutely. I did not go through BUDS. I went through green team training with the unit that I served with and got some amazing training, got to do some incredible things, but definitely do not wear a trident nor claim to, and I have nothing but honor and respect for those guys. What I did was sort of like a kindergartner going along with someone doing you know, as they're defending their thesis for their PhD is how it felt to me.
Well, so you were a lot like Whitney in the book. I mean, when, you know, Chunk cans her a rifle and says, you need to learn how to use this, and she says, I'm not a field agent, is basically what you are now.
That's right. I will say the real-life story there is, thank God, the teams that I worked with gave me considerable more time and training than Chunk. Then Chunk gave poor Whitney in that scene. But, yeah, that's not far from the truth.
So one thing that I'm always curious when I talk to authors, particularly veteran authors, is their choice of naming the characters in their books. Is there a reason why Chunk's last name is Redmond by any chance?
So what we're going to do here is we're going to tell you, without giving away any specifics, that a great number of our characters – share full or partial names with teammates, friends, and colleagues that we're trying to honor in those books. We don't generally call out the real details because some of those people are prior team guys or even current team guys. So we don't tell the stories behind them, but the names of most of these main characters are either partial or amalgam names of people that we have served with, and that's something we do with their permission as a way to thank them and honor them.
I just ask because I have a suspicion at least one of those guys has been on American Warrior Radio, but I'll leave it at that.
You probably had a Redmond on that's a friend of ours who's doing incredible work. Jason Redmond is I didn't say we named him after him, but I am saying that Jason Redmond is an amazing guy, and I'm glad he's on your show. I love that guy.
Well, and
I'll bet that was a fun interview.
And one of the best T-shirts ever for a veteran, in my opinion. Just a couple minutes for the break, and I don't know who wants to take this, but one other thing that I was curious about, themes in Sons of Valor, your new book, also talks about Tier 1 operators and the intelligence folks being part of the same team, rather than that intel coming from outside sources. Is that based on wishful thinking, or is that reality happening now, or can you not talk about that?
Maybe a little bit of both. I think that one of the greatest things that came out of this 2 decades that we've done of warfare here against jihadi terrorists and others is how joint warfare has become. You know, we used to talk about joint training and joint deployments and stuff, but it didn't really mean anything. It meant we were all over there together in our own sides of the camp and doing our own thing with our own little rice bowls. But this war has grown the joint concept, you know, beyond anything it's ever been. And I think that you see that downrange, especially when you look in special operations and especially at the Tier 1 level. The integration of CIA, other government agencies, Naval Special Warfare, Army Special Operations, all integrated into these task force units where each of them can bring their strengths and augment the weaknesses of the others is incredible. It is a force multiplier beyond anything we've seen in special operations before that.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're talking with Jeffrey Wilson and Brian Andrews. They are collaborative authors, both Navy veterans. When we come back, we're going to talk more about transitions in the military and what's worked for them and what might work for some of you out there listening. Sign up and subscribe to their newsletter. Visit www.andrews-wilson.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're having a wonderful chat with co-authors Jeffrey Wilson and Brian Andrews. They've got a number of books. They've got Sons of Valor, just releases this month. There's another book, gentlemen, that I know is sitting in my inbox I haven't gotten to yet, Dark Intercept, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. That's another series that's launching this September, and that one is published by Tyndale House. And it's a slightly different vibe for us. We haven't written a story or a series like this. It still incorporates military characters, which is one of the hallmarks of our brand, but it's different. We're also sort of exploring the idea of faith and crisis in faith and spiritual warfare, and there's some supernatural elements in this that makes it a little bit of a departure, but we're really excited for it.
Ooh, I can't wait to read it.
I mean, well, we'll definitely make sure you get one if you don't have one already.
I tell you, I literally went through Sons of Valor in less than 2 days. It's definitely a page turner. And folks, if you like thrillers, definitely check out andrews-wilson.com. You're going to enjoy their works. Gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about the transitions. One thing that I've noticed, you know, particularly when I talk with special forces operators, people at the tip of the spear, when they leave the military, there's a sense of a loss of tribe, a loss of purpose. I talked to a pararescueman just yesterday who's retiring, and he says they're going to rent their house out for 2 years, just get an RV, and just travel the country. And I was jealous, and I appreciated that, but then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, maybe after almost 30 years as a PJ, he's not quite sure what to do with himself. Is that a common thing that you all hear out there with your fellow veterans?
I think it's very common. Even if you know what to do with yourself in terms of job or career or family, how to do it definitely changes during that transition. You know, in the military, this, you know, you use the words team and mission before self. That is just part of who you are, this team aspect. Your identity is tied up in your team, in your unit, in your specialty, in your rank even. And when all of that is suddenly taken away, even if you're employing your skills in a way that's meaningful, it's so different that I think that people struggle with that transition. And I think that it's emphasized even more or magnified perhaps more now because, you know, unlike World War II, where there was an end to the war and the hostility ceased and there was a ticker tape parade, you come home now and you make that decision to transition. You also have that other aspect of
gosh, I'm making my transition, but my buddies are still out there. I've still got friends out on the pointy tip of the spear. They're going to do another deployment 6 months from now. I'm not going to be there. So I think those two things combine to make transition very, very difficult for almost everybody, to be honest.
Now, Jeffrey, I'm guessing your transition was pretty clear. I mean, you were going back into medicine. You're currently, if I'm not mistaken, a vascular surgeon. So, but am I oversimplifying things?
Well, my wife would say you are, because it didn't really work out that way as much as she hoped it would. When I left the active duty Navy, I spent a number of years working in the contracting and as a consultant for government agencies and stuff like that. I found it very, very difficult to simply say, okay, I did that. Now let me go and be a civilian surgeon. And in fact, it was so difficult that I never was able to quite make that transition and become a civilian surgeon. After all the things that I experienced during my time in the Navy and then the various things I did afterwards, I just sort of lost my appetite for it. It just didn't seem like that challenging anymore. And of course, at that time, we were writing books, and Brian and I had started writing together. And so I was given this opportunity to go off in another direction. But I would say that I had a very difficult time with that transition. I just had a hard time saying that part of my life is over and I'm going to do this next thing, because it just wasn't over for so many people.
Yeah, I find it interesting you say that, Jeffrey, because Jack Carr has got an endorsement just big and bold on the cover of your book, which is pretty damn slick coming from him. But, you know, Jack is one of those guys that he's a former SEAL team member, and he just flipped the, as I understand it from talking to him, he just kind of just flipped the switch. That part of my life is over now. I'm going to put it in the box and move on. But he might be kind of unique in that way.
Yeah, I have nothing but respect for guys that do that. And I certainly have known some other people that were able to make that clean transition. And good for them. That's maybe they're just better, stronger people than me. I don't know. But if you have the ability to do that, that's great. But I know it's very common to have a difficult time making that transition. And Jack, by the way, is a great guy. He's been a good friend to us, and we certainly appreciate all he does.
Brian, you were pretty well set too, because I know there's a lot of demand for submarine drivers in the private sector.
Yeah, I mean, they're everywhere, right? You just can't get on the street without running a damn submarine.
Submariner wanted. It's in every paper.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, I think for me, when I was transitioning, I said to myself, okay, I really don't know what I want to do. I know I want to go into business. I don't know how to do this. So I applied to business schools, and I also applied to a program called the Park Leadership Fellow Program, which was one of the best decisions I ever made. It's a program at Cornell that focuses on leadership, and specifically the core of the program is about developing servant leaders in all different walks of life, all different businesses. So I met people who had been working at NGOs, people who had been investment bankers, people who had been doing sales and marketing, entrepreneurs, people from startups, you know, just you name it. And, you know, one of the things I think that's tough for service members, whether you were enlisted or officer, you know, you're used to having that, whether it's a chevron on your shoulder or, you know, gold bar on your collar, and you would walk into a room and you had a place, you had a rank, you had instant respect. And, you know, when I got out and I started a business school and I started trying to do something entrepreneurially based, you know, I would show up to a meeting, or I got into the power industry, I'd show up at a power plant, you know, nobody knew me from Adam, you know, I couldn't wear my rank, I had nothing to trade off of. That currency that I had, you know, sort of innate to being in the military, was all gone. And you really do feel like you have to start over. And I think, you know, what Jack, when you mentioned Jack's story, yes, he flipped the switch, but he did something which is similar to what Jeff and I did. You know, you realize that, you know, you're not alone out there as a veteran. There's a whole community of people who are just like you, and it's the veteran community, and they've been through it. You know, some of them have been through it and become very successful. And these are folks that if you reach out to them and you ask for help, they're willing to be mentors. They're willing to be sounding boards. And that's what's really, really cool. And I think that's one of the messages that we want to try to broadcast to your listeners is, you know, if you're a veteran and you feel like you're flapping in the wind, please do not be afraid to go on social media. You can find veterans doing all kinds of things. Like Jeff mentioned, Eli Crane with his bottle breacher business. You've got Tim Cruikshank, who's got Bone Frog Coffee. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit later, too. But if you reach out to these people, they're willing to talk to you and help connect you with other veterans who will set you down the path and share lessons learned. And that is very, very powerful.
And I do want to talk about that collaborative idea as well during, just not right now, but because that, to me, that's one thing that really stands out about the work that the two of you are doing. And really, doing our pre-interview, you know, I had a certain mental image going into this about the cutthroat nature of the publishing world, and you two set me straight. But real quick, Brian, I just, you know, life lessons, kind of putting the screws in full reverse, or however you say that in submarine talk. One of your first life lessons, you're a young midshipman. You studied psychology because the Navy said you could study whatever you want, and then decided to go into the submarine force, and you're sitting across from an admiral, and he says, in effect, why in the heck should I invest in you and share that? Now, I tell you, I've been on a submarine a couple of times. Psychology is the perfect fit, I believe, but the admiral could use some convincing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this gentleman, this admiral, second highest ranking admiral in the Navy, head of naval reactors, and, you know, his job is to really be that gatekeeper, because you can't just let any yahoo out there on a nuclear-powered submarine with nuclear missiles. And, you know, this is a dangerous and very complex platform. And so, you know, he took his job very seriously. And you know, like you said, for me as a young man, that was the first time that I realized, okay, you know, when he hit me with that question, you know, what the – bleep business do you have wanting to be in my nuclear Navy? I realized, okay, you know, it was like time slowed down. Like we tell, like we say in our stories, it really, I felt like a character that time came to a stop. And I had to decide, okay, do I sort of wilt in my chair and say, oh, blah, 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 I don't know. Or do I stick up for myself and do I fight for what I want? And I think this idea of fighting to have a seat at the table is important to communicate. And for me, that was what happened. And I said, you know, in my case, I knew that they had a room full of engineers out there applying, and I was the only psychology guy. So it was the one point of difference that I had, and I decided to use it. And so I just said, hey, you got a whole hallway of engineers out there, but you only got one of me. And I'm a point of difference. You know, when all these guys are thinking, you know, go left, I might be the one guy that's thinking go right because I have a different perspective. And maybe I'm right that time, and maybe it's important for a captain to have a guy who sees a different picture. And, you know, he stared at me, and he grumbled, but it resonated with him. And I think, you know, regardless of what business you want to go into, regardless of what your dream is, you know, if you're going to be cowed at the first roadblock or the first person that slams the door in your face and says no, if you say, oh, okay, and you give up, you know, what a shame. Because that's kind of how the world works, and there's a lot of gatekeepers, and their job is to slam the door in your face and see what you do. And that's kind of what he was doing to me. He wanted to see how will this guy respond. Because if he can't take a no from me, if he can't take the pressure in this office, I certainly don't want him standing and maneuvering, you know, during a steamline rupture when the reactor could melt down. Like, that's not the guy I need, you know, running my submarine.
I wanted you to share that because that's an important life lesson for all our listeners out there, whether you're in the military transitioning or if you're just maybe a young person out there looking for your first job. Make yourself stand out. And make sure you think about it, Brian. I think it was General Patton said, if everybody in the room is thinking the same thing, somebody's not thinking. So I want to talk more about collaboration as it has to do with your books and also what you're doing to interact with other veterans out there. Gentlemen, when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia talking with Jeffrey Wilson and Brian Andrews. You can learn more, andrews-wilson.com. Sign up, subscribe to their newsletter. You're going to enjoy their books. Trust me. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Jeffrey Wilson and Brian Andrews. They are both, like I said, prolific authors. They've got a number of just really great thriller series out. You can learn more. Visit andrews-wilson.com. Gentlemen, I heard another interview where you said you always start each book off with a what-if question, and then you build the story from there. Again, without not revealing too much about Sons of Valor, the what-if question in there is something that has given me chills for a long time, and that's the subject of a whole another show. But tell me, how does that, your collaboration, logistically, how does that work? You develop the idea, and then, Brian, you take this chapter, and Jeff, you take that chapter, or how does that, how do you pull it off?
Yeah, that sounds like a crazy way to write a book, but that's actually exactly what we do. We've had the opportunity to be on panels with other co-authors a few times, and it's funny, you know, everybody has their way of doing it, and it doesn't sound like it would work to anybody else and probably wouldn't. So our method works for us probably because of our military background and that, you know, ability to put ego aside and make it all about the mission. And the mission in this case is just to write a good, entertaining book. So, yeah, we start with a what-if question, like you said. You know, in this case, it's, hey, with a new generation of warfighters and a new generation of terrorists, what if the terrorists were able to skew this asymmetric battlefield that's been created over the last two decades? You know, we control the airspace. We have drone technology. We're taking out high-value targets from with standoff weapons. What if the bad guys, this new generation of terrorists who now are a little more tech-savvy, more social media savvy, are more educated, more multilingual, what if they could figure out a way to shift that balance and have a drone technology of their own? And so that was sort of the what-if that we started with in Sons of Valor for the first book. But in general, what we do is once we have that premise, we brainstorm, which sounds like something, you know, intellectual. It's actually more like 2 8-year-olds in the backyard with toy rifles saying, hey, what if we did that? No, you know, it's a great idea. So we do that kind of thing for a couple of weeks. And then just like you described, then we literally split it up. So we generally write in a 3-act structure. So the first act, we'll try to map that out as detailed as we can, and we'll assign chapters to one another and write in multiple points of view. So I'll be writing one character while he's writing another. And we write simultaneously, so we're in contact constantly. During that phase, we might be talking 4 or 5 times a day, and we're each producing content. And then after we each write a couple of chapters, we swap them, and we rewrite each other's stuff, and they go into a master folder. So it's a highly efficient way to write when you have a team like this, because you can be moving and producing content so quickly.
Let's talk about content a little bit, because Ben gets a dumb question every show because it's my darn show. I'm paying for it. Well, my advertisers are paying for it, but you know what I'm saying. So I had Sebastian Junger on recently, a guy you two probably never heard of, and I was kind of busting his chops. I said, look, your publicist sent me this 3-page list of questions that I'm supposed to ask you. We're going to throw that out the door. We're going to freewheel it. But in my case, I do try as much as possible to listen to other interviews with guests that are coming on, because I don't want my listeners to hear the same thing they could find almost anywhere out there. Do you avoid reading Jack Carr or Don Bentley's books? Do you ever worry about idea cross-contamination?
No, we don't worry about that so much, but I will tell you that because of the number of series that we're writing simultaneously and how much is on our plate, you know, it used to be that we would read our fellow writers' works, you know, as a luxury, you know, as a fun way to spend our time. Now we do like to read. Like Jeff and I just finished reading the new Tom Clancy Target Acquired, which is written by Don Bentley, who's an Army veteran. He's a friend. But now, you know, we have to be a little more selective, because a lot of times we're reading them to not only support the work, but we'll give, you know, endorsements or blurbs. And you know, there's kind of a stack of books, you know, that's in the queue. So for us to read those books, that they got to go into the queue, and we're trying to support those other authors, and they're doing the same for us in addition to doing our day job, which is, you know, writing our own series.
And that brings it back to the co-collaboration, co-promotion idea. But, you know, we use at American Warrior Radio, we use Bottle Breachers. Our fans love them. But you've also got your own line of coffee. Sons of Valor Coffee with Bone Frog Coffee. Folks should check that out as well, huh? A good brew?
Yeah, great group of folks over at Bone Frog. I tell you, we were talking earlier about veterans lifting each other up, and that's sort of how those relationships formed for us. You know, Bone Frog is a great example. You know, I saw what Tim Cruikshank, a Navy SEAL, retired Navy SEAL who owns this company, as well as Bone Frog Sellers. I saw some of the great charity work he was doing, and I reached out to him and said, hey, what can we do? What can we do to help get the word out about your product, to help grow your company, and to help support these charities? And we instantly became friends, and because we share a heart for service and a heart for serving this community. And I think you see that kind of thing a lot, where veterans are lifting one another up. So in the case of Bone Frog Coffee, he's supporting charities that we support as well. And so we started helping him get the word out about his coffee, and he came to us and said, hey, why don't we do a Sons of Valor blend coffee? Now, I'd be a liar if I said that was a completely charitable thing on our part, because the idea that there's a coffee out there that has our book cover on it, that's kind of cool, right? So that was a big part of it also. Yeah. But the idea that we could take all the proceeds from our share of that and donate it to Naval Special Warfare Charities was just really exciting. And when you partner with a guy like Cruikshank and Bone Frog Coffee, you're going to not be misrepresenting your brand. I mean, he's a Navy SEAL. He does everything 120%. He doesn't just throw together some coffee. He's got this guy that blends them for him, and it's an incredible coffee. It's like the best coffee
I've ever
had.
I'm going to get some. I'm a coffee drinker. So let me just – we're running out of time, so I've got an idea I'd like to share with you. I know that you have got an internal code of conduct that you have in your writing process, so I'm not sure if I want the heart guy to answer this or the brains guy to answer this. But what about in the next series, Chunk talks about how he's out in Arizona for Halo training. He decides to pop into the Trident Grill, his favorite pub owned by a veteran Navy SEAL, and toast a beer with the host of his favorite program, American Warrior Radio. You could just squeeze that into, you know, a chapter. It doesn't work that way?
Maybe there's a training op, Jeff. They have to do the desert.
Yeah, I like that idea. I think it's definitely something to make happen.
Shameless pitch. I've got to do that. Speaking of shameless, ladies and gentlemen, please visit andrews-wilson.com. Sign up, subscribe to their newsletter. Sons of Valor comes out this month. They've got fellas, I guess you're producing, what, a book every couple of months, huh?
It's getting to that point. Yeah, we've got a book coming out right now, this Sons of Valor. It came out June 8th, and then in September we've got Dark Intercept, and we're now writing the Presidential Agent series on behalf of the Webb Griffin Estate. Our first installment for Putnam of that book comes, Rogue Asset, comes out December 7th. So, yeah, every time you turn around, there's going to be another Andrews and Wilson book.
Jeffrey and Brian, I don't know where you find the time, but I'm glad you do, and listeners will be glad you do as well, and we're very grateful for you to spending some time with us on the weekend.
Honored to be on the show, truly. We really, really have a lot of respect for all the great stuff you're doing, Ben.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, you're a great interviewer, and we just really appreciate this opportunity, so thanks so much.
Thank you, gentlemen. Well, you heard it from those guys themselves. Check out all podcasts. We've got over 250 other interviews at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Pandora, Deezer, TuneIn. We're everywhere. If you support what we're doing, check out patreon.com/AmericanWarriorRadio. You can throw a little money in the kitty to help us continue these programs. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.